We were speaking last time of the relations between soul and nature, between Purusha and Prakriti, as they are termed in Indian philosophy. We also saw that the soul has to acquire full domination over nature. And that is possible only by our soul uniting with the divine Purusha, the divine soul in the universe. And it is only by this identity arrived at between the individual Purusha and the divine that it is possible to bring nature under complete control. But as we function on earth, the reverse is the case. The soul is completely subject to nature. Even when we think we have mastery over nature, it is only a subtle slavery. The freedom, the domination is more mental than real. Even on the mental plane, there is a mental nature to which the mental soul is subject. How then are we to achieve this full liberation of soul and the subsequent mastery of the soul over nature? Certainly it is not possible on earth as it is constituted. It can only be possible, according to logic, in some other world where the soul is not so hopelessly subject to nature, where things are more flexible and free. Or there must be in our own being, in our own consciousness, levels of existence called planes of consciousness, where it is possible to establish different relations with nature. In the traditional yoga of knowledge, what is done is that the reason stands between the earth world, the world in which we live, where the soul is completely lost in nature, and stands between this level and the spiritual plane of existence, the spiritual world, where the soul is not subject. Maybe it is not the master, but it is not subject to nature. Once the reason makes this demarcation, the spiritual will, the central will, steps in and detaches itself from involvement in the nature of the world, nature in the world, and sets the soul in freedom. No doubt, in the course of this transition, the soul perceives that there are many other levels of existence which it has not negotiated, simply because they are irrelevant to its purpose. Not only irrelevant, but certain traditions say that they are even dangerous, because the experience is that these planes of existence yield to the soul are distracting, illusive, deceptive. And the straight-eyed soul prefers to ignore them. But this narrow path is not open to the seeker of the integral path. Even as God accepts the universe with all its planes, several planes, and the several worlds of each plane, he who seeks to God, realize God in his totality, has got to accept, has got to embrace the universe in all its totality. This province of knowledge of the various planes of existence, the gradations of the cosmic being, is properly the field of occult science. In the West, it was cultivated in detail, whereas in the East, it never formed a separate subject by itself, for the simple reason that to the Eastern outlook, to the Eastern mind, nothing was truly occult. Each one was interrelated with the other spheres of existence, and one had only to turn the attention to whichever side one chose in order to know them better. All the same, these planes of existence have been given different systems of classification in the different traditions of the world, according to the approach, according to the goal, according to the process that is chosen. Certain aspects of this occult knowledge are emphasized in one system, passed over in another. Sri Aurobindo chooses the system that has been handed down by the seers of the Veda and, if we can say so, explicitly stated in the great line of the Upanishads. He prefers these because they have this system of classification has been done with a view to help our objective of liberation. Liberation from ignorance, liberation from involvement in lower nature. According to this system, the whole manifestation is conceived as based on seven principles. Seven principles of existence, beginning from our end, the body, the life and the mind, based upon the principles of matter, life force and mind. Above, there are the eternal, uncreated worlds or planes of existence, consciousness and bliss, Sat, Chit, Ananda. Linking them is the world, is the plane of truth consciousness, called the supermind. These seven principles are interwoven. They are not separate from each other really, but they are so many demarcated principles of manifestation. You would ask, as we have been asked so often, what exactly is a plane of existence? What do you mean by plane of consciousness? A plane in this context means the particular poise of the soul related to its nature. The poise taken by the soul and the relations that are built up between nature and soul, they differ from level to level of existence. So where a particular type of relation obtains, where there is one fixed poise of relation between the soul and nature, that is recognized as a plane of existence. On each plane, there can be many worlds. It will not do to confuse a plane and a world. And a plane of consciousness, it is a vast expanse of existence where there may be different worlds with different stresses, but based fundamentally on the same principle that governs that plane of existence. Each, the universe, the existence, Sri Aurobindo points out, always contains three terms implicit in it on whatever plane you approach. There is first the sheer existence. What exists is conscious. On its own, at core, it is conscious. On the surface, whether the consciousness is manifest or not, articulate or not, within the existence, there is the awareness. This awareness, further, is not a static awareness. It is a forceful awareness. The awareness extends itself as a force, as a power. And this power or force functions to affirm the delight of existence. And existence is there, self-aware, spreading itself in force for a purpose. That purpose is to express and to affirm its delight of existence on the plane on which it is organized. So, whatever the plane of existence, these three terms, existence, consciousness, and bliss or delight, they are present, latent or patent. This plane of earth, physical earth on which we live, is the first plane with which we are concerned. Here, the poise of soul and nature is fixed. The soul is completely involved in nature. Consciousness is completely involved in a poise which appears to be one of inconscience. Delight is buried in insentience. So the characteristic feature of our plane of existence, of the earth on which we live, is one of complete involution, complete subjection to nature. The purpose of life here is to evolve what is involved, to unveil what is hidden. The whole struggle for existence, as it is called, is towards this end, to release the soul from its entire subjection to nature, to awake consciousness from its sleep, to free the impulse of delight from swoon of insensibility in which it is imprisoned. This is the character of the plane, material plane based upon matter, on which our world on earth is organized. If this were all, there would be no hope of liberation for the soul on earth. If this was the entire pattern, the framework, man could never hope to get liberation. But this plane of existence, the material plane, is not alone, as we have seen. It is only one plane, one gradation of a larger system in which there are other gradations overtopping the material. Above the material, there is another plane, differently organized, with a different poise of the soul as regards his nature, that is governed by the life principle. If inertia, stability, is the feature of the material plane, movement, flexibility, is the feature of the life plane. If on earth it is the form that is more important, that determines the action of the life energy or the consciousness, on the life plane it is the life force, the life energy that determines what form it will have. Life existence is freer. Forms change. There is a more rapid movement. There is a greater release and more adaptability in the relations of the soul with nature. The soul, when it takes its poise on the life plane, is called the vital Purusha, the vital soul. This plane is definitely and infinitely larger than the material plane. We are apt to think that the earth is boundless, the physical universe is so vast. But the subtler and the vital world plane, the life plane, is vaster. It envelops the physical. It is much larger. There is more freedom. And it has got in itself the vital, the life existence has got subplanes. There are those nearer the material earth, almost melting into the subtle earth, subtle physical, even as there are those above which touch the mental planes. The experience of the soul is correspondingly different from subplane to subplane. On the subplanes touching the physical are the intensities of the heavens and the hells constructed by human imagination. It is a superstition that heaven and hell are permanent locations somewhere in existence. Actually, they are our own projections, projections of our own thoughts, imaginations, desires and passions on the vital plane, on the life plane, where they form on the strength of our projection. If we withdraw our support, they just dissolve. Each person creates his own heaven and his own hell. They are not cosmic provinces. A heaven where the virtuous go and hell where the sinners are thrown. They are individual formations which thrive in the vital worlds. Similarly, on the higher planes of the vital, in the higher worlds of the vital plane, there are the mental heavens, the psychic heavens, the ideal worlds, a reflection of the ideal worlds which the pure mind imagines, constructs in its dealing in ideas. So the vital plane is a variegated part of the universe where there is more freedom, but still the soul continues to be subject to the vital nature. As we said, each plane has its own soul, projection of the soul and projection of nature. Both share in the characteristics of the plane on which they are functioning. The physical world is in a sense a projection of certain movements on the vital plane. When vital movements seek to realize themselves in different conditions than their own, it is the material world that comes into being. To put it more philosophically, it is as a result of pressure from the life world that life forms itself in the material world and manifests there. In each person, there is the projection of the vital world, the life world. What we are conscious of as the desire self, our personality that seeks to acquire, to enjoy, to dominate, to aggrandize, is only the surface projection of the life self within us. The larger part of the life self is behind. It is called in Sri Aurobindo's philosophy, the true and the inner vital being. Just as this life world and life plane has its own organization, its own basis of manifestation, there is above it the mental plane, where mind is the ruler, not life force, but it is mentality. The mental consciousness determines all movement, not only in its own world, but through the life force below, it influences and forms itself in the physical world as the physical mind. In this realm of the mental plane, the movement is still faster, more free. Time and space are not so binding as in the physical world. When the mental principle or the mental soul projects itself in the vital world, it takes on the character of desire and becomes the desire mind or the vital mind on the vital plane. And when it reaches in the course of its manifestation the material world, it becomes the physical mind. As with the vital being, on the mental plane also, there is the surface mentality, the surface mind, which is somewhat superficial, and behind it is the larger mind, which functions somewhat differently. It is not restless in thinking activity, but it is calm, still, and for the greater part, it reflects what comes from above. For above the mind, there are other planes, still other planes of existence, what are called the spiritual planes of the upper hemisphere. We are not conscious of them because they are not yet organized in the evolutionary sense in our being. The Upanishad speaks of the physical sheath, the vital sheath, the mental sheath, and thereafter the knowledge sheath and the bliss sheath. This knowledge sheath and the bliss sheath are really two aspects of the causal body, what we may call in Sri Aurobindo's terminology the supramental body, which is not yet organized in the human system. Still, some influence from that plane touches man indirectly. Till recently, it used to be indirect through the various intervening planes of existence between mind and supermind. It is only today, at this hour of evolution, that the ray of the supramental light is able to act directly in the mind. And that part of the mind which receives the supramental light directly is called the mind of light. It has started touching the physical, but it is not yet organized or firmly established in the physical as it is on the mental heights. The mind of light is already formed, it is functioning. Whoever reaches that stage of evolution can embody it. But the supramental light is not yet become part of the physical existence in the sense in which it can be a permanent acquisition for anyone who strives. For that, in principle, the material transformation has to be achieved. It is only when the last recalcitrant cell in physical matter, it is a distinct possibility in the immediate future, but we have to wait on the Supreme's will. In the present chapter, we have been concerned only with these three planes of existence, because it is on those planes that we still live and on which we have to work out the freedom of the soul from nature and acquire on those levels a certain mastery, so that nature becomes a vehicle of the soul. Created worlds, they refer to the upper hemisphere, Sat, Chit, Ananda. It is those three that project themselves and create themselves, create themselves in different conditions as the worlds of matter, worlds of life, and worlds of mind. In that sense, the lower three worlds are created worlds, created in the course of evolutionary process. But those worlds, Sat, Chit, Ananda, they are there irrespective of whether the evolutionary movement is there or not. They are called in Indian philosophy the eternal uncreate. We call them worlds in our terms. They are actually the presentations of the supreme reality about which we can know nothing. When it lends itself to be perceived and experienced by the human consciousness, we see them as the eternal worlds, as the eternal aspects of the reality as Sat, Chit, Ananda. We call them worlds, but they are not really worlds in our sense.
But are they worlds that where there is a permanent existence?
They are permanent worlds.
And there's a relationship.
They are permanent worlds because actually it is one organization, one system, presenting three aspects, triple aspect. It is a triple world. That is why some systems don't even speak of seven planes of existence, seven worlds. They simply say five worlds, because the lower three, the mind of the supermind, the supramental, and then they take in one block, Sat, Chit, Ananda. They don't distinguish three at all. And for spiritual experience, that is more true. It is for understanding of our logical intelligence that we speak of seven worlds. But actually in spiritual realization, after the supramental, it is all bliss.
Just one more question. Even though it's all bliss, is that the area that Sri Aurobindo experienced? You know, he went through the nirvanic stage, and he went through it.
No.
And beyond, which he saw the endless time in the permanent sense of existence. So that balanced your time.
This bliss principle, this Ananda, is manifest on each plane of existence. When you touch a certain depth, whether in matter or in life force or in the mind, you experience that delight principle, uncaused delight, throbbing, flowing on its own without any cause. So each seer, each saint, each realized man, when he seeks the delight, he gets it on the plane of his realization. The Advaitic experience that Sri Aurobindo had, it is on that level, that altitude of being, where the mind falls utterly silent, and there is a possession by the impersonal, that there is the permanent peace and the ineffable bliss. It is on that plane. Go still higher, and there will be a bliss and a delight appropriate to that plane. That is why the mother says in one of our prayers, in the prayers and meditations, we have to construct a harmony of the various delights on the various levels of our being.
Then there's no permanent construction in those planes.
These three are there on every plane: existence, consciousness, and bliss, in principle.
But not construction. They're not permanent.
They're self-existent.
But they're permanent in their...
They are permanent there, but even here, they project themselves and they try to express themselves, formulate themselves in different conditions.
There's no projection on their own plane.
There is no projection, it is only a self-existence.
Okay, I'll talk to you later.
No, no, it is... There they are self-existence. Here they have to manifest. The Satchidananda that is self-existent in the material plane, you can't realize. We have to realize as it manifests on earth.
These have to have something, these levels, to have a prototype from, don't they?
Prototype is there.
Yes, but it has to have its own self and its own state, self-realized and constructed, doesn't it?
They construct themselves here in different patterns. The world of existence, the principle of existence, which is self-existent there, which is uncreate, it throws itself here.
Oh, it's uncreate.
Yes. Okay. Here it throws itself in different conditions and creates the material world.
I see, when you said the uncreated worlds a while ago, I thought you meant that they were worlds that had never been created but always existed.
There.
I don't care where.
Yeah. Upper hemisphere. The worlds of the upper hemisphere, they are not created by any creative godhead. They are antecedent to evolution. In whatever cycle, ours, the present cycle is a cycle of evolution. But you have to conceive of other cycles where it is, the principle may not be one of evolution. But those worlds of existence, consciousness, bliss, they are always there because they are the absolute as turned towards manifestation.
I don't want to take your time. I've got too many questions.
They are eternally existent in themselves. They do not need to enter into the movement of manifestation. Here, our worlds, they have to pass through the process of evolution to be perfect. There, they are eternally perfect.
But there is no construction.
There, no construction. Here, there is construction.
And that's the unmanifest we're talking
about. In the unmanifest, there are not even worlds. There is not, you can't even say there is existence, consciousness, bliss. When what is unmanifest turns towards manifestation, the first experience you have is of these three aspects.
that the area where you experience my identity? I'll leave it for the rest
of the day. No, I didn't.
Reach the level of the causal body, the plane of the causal body, because of Sri Aurobindo's pioneering for us, does that mean that what we need to do is the aspiring and surrendering to receive it, the calling and the receptivity?
Yes. Formerly, even if people had done all this, they couldn't have reached the and realized the supramental. But now that the passage is laid and it has been linked with the earth consciousness, it is a possibility open to all who try for it. Till now it was a concept. We don't know what she will do. But all are hoping that she will come. If she wants, she can come. Question is whether she wants.
Have you observed any positive effects of mother's withdrawal on an acceleration of development in some of inner developments, inner receptivity?
Yeah. There is a continuous inner contact, more easy. There is no gap. And things get done almost with the same facility as was possible when physical contact with her was available. There is less of agitation in the atmosphere, more of calm, which is inexplicable to outsiders. And an increase of faith. I have a theory, which is not entirely from my mind, but supported by many observations now and then. That is, just as in the last crisis, say 10 years ago, mother emptied her being of the mind and the vital, so that the truth consciousness could establish itself entirely on those planes. At this moment, she is emptying herself of physicality. The physical element she is gradually dispossessing herself of it, in order that the higher call it light or consciousness or substance, I think substance would be more appropriate, could replace the physical. That is why she is so much indrawn, minimized taking of food and preoccupied. I have no authority of anyone to tell you this, but that is my study. It is largely an occult process. Why should physical body go? Physical body has to change. Physical body. Where did mother's mind go? Mind, the content of the mind is different. So the content of this body will be different. The outer frame may be there, but the content will be different.
The mind of light then operate in mother's presence?
It has been operating for the last so many years. The action of the supramental light in the physical mind is the mind of light. We have got
physical mind.
Physical mind. There are three gradations. The mind, pure mind, the vital mind and the physical mind, isn't it? Broadly, these are the three levels of the mind. Let us leave the sub-divisions. Mental mind proper, mind in the vital, mind in the physical.
Beginning of the transformation of the cell, cellular substance.
You can say so. When the mind of light gets formed, that is the beginning of the actual transformation of the physical. You start from the physical mind level. Is different. a clean room and a lighted room.
In contacting Mother inwardly, in coming into relation with her, then does the content of our consciousness affect her, or is she protected against our incursions this way?
There is a self-protecting mechanism. There is a self-protecting mechanism which makes her aware of the quality of the consciousness that contacts her. But the things fall back.
So our answer comes in relation to the quality of our own consciousness that reaches her.
No, the response is whatever the quality of our consciousness, as long as the approach is sincere, the
grace comes.
Yes. Gary, we better get back in the daylight.